Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and our spoken words. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarva. I'm your host for the hour with engineer Mike Murphy. And neighbor Mike Metz is here as the keeper of the Prairie Winds Prairie. What's new on the prairie?
Well, those little winged critters are gathering together to start heading south or prepare for the fall.
And there was a congregation of turkey vultures over the ledges yesterday. It's kind of a gathering place. And I thought, well, that's pretty noteworthy.
Actually, there was one just along the Kegley Creek, just off Skunk River. And we saw some of those in that same storm that was reported west.
So the turkey vultures seem to be on the move. Hey, the weather will be summer-like today at 91. And over the weekend, with possible rain on Sunday, Monday and Tuesday, highs will be in the 80s next week. Let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so wonderfully at gathering the news for this week from the pages of our local newspaper.
There was lots of news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's start with last Friday's paper, which reported that Iowa 4th District Republican Congressman Randy Feenstra was encouraging all his constituents to get vaccinated against the coronavirus as the Delta variant continued looming over Iowa and the nation. Feenstra came to Ames last week and said, in his words, "I am very passionate that people need to get vaccinated." He said if they feel uncomfortable about that, they need to talk to their doctors. He also said that politics in the nation's capital are not as divisive as they are portrayed. He said there are things, such as the infrastructure bill, agriculture, science, and technology, that congressional members can work on together. Also last Friday, word that Iowa State University officials and officials from the city of Ames had canvassed neighborhoods around the campus last week, hoping to avoid the type of party-heavy weekend that had drawn so much criticism last year. Known as 801 Day, the Saturday before the fall semester starts traditionally involves big gatherings. Last year, big crowds of unmasked and not socially distant students and the spike in coronavirus cases that followed led to concerns from university, county, and city leaders. Those who did the canvassing last week gave out bags that contained, among other things, information on how to avoid problems with neighbors, as well as information on theft, alcohol, fire safety, mental health first aid, and the availability on campus of coronavirus testing. Then, last Saturday, Welch Avenue south of campus was jammed with students not wearing masks or social distancing. Saturday's paper reported that an Ames man had been arrested in connection with the homicide of a woman found dead during a welfare check in the city on Thursday night. 26-year-old Oscar Chavez was charged with first-degree murder. Ames police had gone to an apartment on Mortensen Road after someone called authorities about a call she said she had received from Chavez. He allegedly was yelling at a woman who was screaming. The caller told police she heard a series of gunshots and asked Chavez if he had killed the woman. Chavez allegedly responded that the woman was dying. Officers found the woman dead in the apartment with multiple gunshot wounds. Chavez had left the apartment and was later picked up in Sac County. This past Wednesday, Ames police released the identity of the dead woman. She was 32-year-old Maria Hanian of Des Moines. The Trib also reported about a digital town hall meeting that had taken place Thursday regarding coronavirus mitigation plans at Iowa State University. Campus President Wendy Winterstein acknowledged the petition from university faculty and others that calls for a campus mask mandate. ISU is encouraging people on campus to wear masks indoors and get vaccinated. The State Board of Regents could legally require masks at Iowa State and the other two public universities in Iowa, but state law prohibits the regents from requiring people on the campuses to show proof of vaccination. A doctor from Mary Greeley Hospital in Ames told the town hall participants that masks seem to decrease the overall risk of coronavirus infection by about 70% compared to not wearing one at all. And Story County's public health director said the majority of people testing positive for the coronavirus in the county in recent days have been young people from below the age of 17 up to the age of 29. And the Trib reported that more Ames School District students and adults who live with them would have another chance to get vaccinated against the virus ahead of the start of the new school year. The school district planned to partner with Story County Public Health to host a vaccine clinic this past Tuesday afternoon. That clinic was to be for students who are at least 12 years old and other adults who live with them. Children younger than 12 are not yet eligible to get the coronavirus vaccine. Sunday's paper had a long takeout on the continuing controversy involving a movement to rename Carrie Chapman Catt Hall on the Iowa State University campus. The building was named for Catt in 1995, 75 years after the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was passed. That was the one giving women the right to vote, and Kat, who had graduated from Iowa State in 1880, had been instrumental in winning that right. She had been superintendent of Mason City Schools and had been president of the National American Women's Suffrage Association. But during the battle for women's voting rights, she was said to have connected women's suffrage with white supremacy and referred to Native Americans in a derogatory fashion. For more than two decades, some members of the ISU community have been demanding that Kat's name be taken off that campus building, and this fall, a committee will outline a timeline for making a recommendation to University President Wendy Winterstein about whether to do just that. The Trib also reported that officials at all three public universities in Iowa are giving students advice on how to navigate the issue of coronavirus vaccination status among roommates on their campuses. Iowa State University, the University of Iowa, and the University of Northern Iowa are encouraging, but not mandating, their community members to get vaccinated. The universities are advising students who are rooming together to be as open as possible when it comes to communication and ask their roommates about their vaccination status. Tuesday's paper reported that fire had destroyed the garage of a single-family home in Ames over the weekend. It took place in the 4,000 block of Harrison Circle last Saturday night. Firefighters were able to stop the fire from spreading throughout the house. The garage was a total loss, with damages set at more than $150,000. Residents inside the home made it out safely, and there were no injuries. There was also word Tuesday that the filing period had opened for school board races in the area. The election will be held November 2nd, and the filing period will close September 16th. In Ames, former school board member Gina Perez's seat and those of incumbents Monique Binken and Jeanette Colton are up for election in November. Perez has left the area, and Jane Acker was appointed to fill her post until November. Binken says she will not run for re-election, and Colton has not announced her plans. William Dreyer, Kira Weirstein, and Kelly Winfrey had announced by Monday that they will run for the board. In Ballard, the school board's vice president, Jean Severade, says she will seek another term after 21 years on that board. There was more Tuesday, including word that Ames Black Lives Matter had hosted a teach-in on Friday night at Banshell Park in Ames to talk about what critical race theory is and is not. A new state law bans the teaching of 10 specified defined concepts, including such ideas that the U.S. or Iowa are fundamentally or systemically racist or sexist. Critical race theory is not taught below the level of university law school. And the Trib reported that an Ames High School chemistry teacher, who was Iowa's Teacher of the Year several years ago, had some advice to parents as the new school year starts. Eileen Sullivan told the Trib that she encouraged parents to talk to their children about what worries them, about how they might need help, and about how they, the parents, can take part. Wednesday's paper reported on plans by area school districts regarding the coronavirus pandemic. Under Iowa law, schools are barred from requiring mask wearing, even though the Federal Centers for Disease Control has recommended that all students, staff, and visitors at school districts wear masks. The Story County Board of Health is also recommending that. The Ames, Ballard, Gilbert, Nevada, and Roland Story districts are not requiring masks. But Ames and Roland Story have said masks must be worn on board school buses. Ballard, Gilbert, and Nevada are keeping masks optional on buses. In Ames, middle and high school students have an online learning option. Elementary students do as well, if they have, or live with someone who has, a severe health condition. Gilbert and Nevada also have online options, while Roland Story does not. And there was word that two more candidates had joined the race for the Ames School Board, bringing to five the number of people who will vie for three open seats on the board. The newest candidates are Tom Pearl and Brett Becker. They joined William Dreyer, Kira Weirstein, and Kelly Winfrey in the November 2nd school board election. And there was word that the intersection of 5th Street and Douglas Avenue in Ames was about to become a little brighter after the repainting of the LGBTQ plus Pride sidewalks there. The touch-up comes in time for Pride Fest week starting September 5th. Yesterday's paper reported that the Ames City Council had moved forward with a proposed aquatic center. The estimated $31 million project that will replace the municipal pool that's set to be torn down next year. The council voted to set a public hearing for September 14th. That's needed to move forward with approving a maximum of $21 million in obligation bonds. The city will try to fundraise $10 million for the aquatic center, leaving the $21 million to be covered in general obligation bonds. Residents could still prevent the purchase of the bonds and force a citywide vote on them if a petition receives a minimum of 477 signatures and is submitted before the start of the public hearing on September 14th. There was also word that the city had released its 2040 plan and is asking for public input. That plan will replace the current land use plan adopted in 1997. It will direct city growth through the year 2040. There was also word that preliminary work would begin this week on the future Ames Plaza, which will be just east of City Hall. The city was scheduled to begin soil borings for the project yesterday. Construction for the plaza is set to begin next year. The Trib also had word that another person had announced her candidacy for the Ames School Board. Amy Erica Smith became the sixth candidate to say she would run for one of the three available seats on the board. The Trib also reported that many Ames students were returning to school this week. Students in the first through fifth grades in the Ames School District were back in class Wednesday. Everyone else was set to come back yesterday or today. And the Trib had word about this weekend's Lincoln Highway Days in Nevada. The celebration will run through tomorrow, with carnival rides and games at the Story County Fairgrounds, a parade tomorrow morning at 10, an antique tractor show and classic car display on Main Street, a rodeo, and more. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart. Time for me to get on my horse and ride out of here, but promising to come right back here to Local Talk on Monday morning at 7, when I'll have word on what's been making news around Iowa. Between now and then, I hope we'll all have a great weekend.
She would never say where she came from. Yesterday don't matter if it's gone. While the sun is bright, or in the darkest night, no one knows. She comes and goes. Goodbye.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your week in the news. And the music interlude is Ruby Tuesday by the Rolling Stones and commemoration of their drummer Charlie Watts, who passed away Wednesday. Watts began with the band early on and is considered by many as the greatest rock and roll drummer of the era. Watts also seemed to unite Keith Richards and Bill Wyman guitars with Mick Jagger's vocal swaggers. Watts performed in such a way that less is more on the drums. He will be missed. Condolences to Charlie Watts' family. Shirley, his wife of 58 years, daughter Serafina, and granddaughter Charlotte. Charlie Watts was 80.
When you change with every new day, still I'm gonna miss you.
Last weekend, there was a music-infused benefit concert to save Bloody Run Trout Stream in far northeast Iowa, in Clayton County. Bloody Run Trout Stream has the designation of a protected water in the Iowa Department of Natural Resources legal system. Protected Waters program includes the Boone River, locally in northern Boone County. Larry Stone was MC for the event and key advocate for the environment concerning a cattle feedlot in the watershed of Bloody Run Trout Stream.
Most of us are here because the headwaters of Bloody Run is not the place for what our good friend Tim Mason called a poop factory. And, you know, that was Tim's language, but that was what the developers called it, essentially, when they developed it or came up with the idea 4.5 years ago. They weren't a cattle operation. They were a biogas operation. It just happened that they needed 10,000 head of cattle to produce enough manure to make enough biogas to make the thing viable. And it got a whole lot more complicated than that, I guess. We protested it at the time when it was going to be 10,000 head of cattle in the watershed of Blade Run Creek. Karst topography, I guess we all know what karst topography is, sinkholes, fractured limestone, a direct conduit to the aquifer for pollutants. We didn't get anywhere. Construction continued for several years with various setbacks here and there. And we protested at public meetings. How many of you went to some of our public meetings and hearings and sent letters and comments and all that? A lot of you I know did. To no avail. The construction continued without a permit. They finally did get sort of some permits. They were supposed to go to the Iowa Attorney General when the DNR staff got fed up with it. The politically appointed Environmental Protection Commission did not send it to the Attorney General. Work continued. Finally, despite all the financial problems and legal disputes, it finally got mostly constructed. They built six pens, buildings, open feedlots they were called, because 10% of the building was not covered by a roof. Therefore, it's an open feedlot under DNR rules. They built their 39 million gallon lagoon about a year ago, about now. Also about that time, the energy component, Wall's energy component, all of a sudden disappeared, became Supreme Beef, only cattle, methane digester for the biogas, abandoned, I guess. Then they had to submit a manure management plan, it was called. What are you going to do with the manure from those 11,000? Oh, it went from 10,000 head of cattle to 11,600 head of cattle. What are you going to do with all that manure? Well, the rules and regulations say you've got to apply it on land in a rate that the crops will be able to take it up as fertilizer. And that's what the rules say. And depending on how you calculate that, that depends on how much manure you can put on the land. Well, the DNR and Supreme Beef ended up calculating about 1/4 of the amount of nutrients in that cattle manure that we think is the correct amount. Therefore, they have now approved a nutrient management plan that is in danger of having over-application of manure to the land if they put it out there, because they've got way more nutrients in that manure than they think they do, and not enough land to soak it all up. So what next? We appealed to the Iowa Environmental Protection Commission. The lawyers shut us down. We appealed to Kayla Lyon, DNR director. Their lawyers shut us down again. The next step is there's something called the Administrative Procedures Act in Iowa, where we can appeal to the courts to say, hey, DNR, you did not follow your own administrative rules and state laws, and therefore you need to reconsider. It's an uphill battle. Lawsuits are expensive. We appreciate everybody coming tonight and helping us out on those four expenses that we foresee. The other thing that we hope to do with some of the money we raise tonight and through other sources is to get water quality baseline data in on Bloody Run. There's some background. We want to get more sites. In fact, some of you who live in the vicinity, if you have know a good spot where you would be willing to have a water quality monitoring machine or people come to do it, let me know, because we're looking for those kind of spots to keep track of the water quality. And we're going to continue advocating for stronger animal feeding operation laws for and regulations for the state of Iowa. So that's sort of our mission and our message. You can find out more at www.savebloodyrun.org. I think that's kind of a quick overview, but if I miss something, some of our other members are here. Steve Vasey is a member of the committee to Save Bloody Run. Wally Taylor, Mike Delaney with the Raccoon River folks is over here helping us out in this part of the state with our water. So it's an uphill fight, but we need to, as Tim Mason said, save Bloody Run. And I first met Tim probably about 1980 or maybe before, when they wanted to put this nice new highway down through here. Tim then got the committee to save Bloody Run going, and then he was passionate about saving Bloody Run and the Driftless until his last breath. So we really owe a lot to Tim Mason for this too.
Oh, sacred wonder, have we forgotten all you provide? Living without you, there is no way that we could survive.
Sacred one, this Driftless one,
This is Jeff Kling, local farmer, at the Save Bloody Run gathering.
I'm here because I care about Bloody Run. Fished there probably at 5 or 6, and there's a swimming hole that I've used on the hottest day of the year. You probably saw my family and I there quite often on the hottest day of the year, maybe the last 2 or 3 years, but before that. The biggest concern then was not the fact that Roger Witter's cattle were grazing right along the creek side, about approximately a half mile upstream. The biggest concern was the cropland with the fertilizers and pesticides. We complain about we need better regulations for a feedlot like that, yes, and I've been so very concerned about the feedlot. But we also concerned about the DNR. If you ask them about the rules regarding commercial fertilizer or pesticides, they say, we do not have the authority to regulate them. They'll send you to IDALS. So I notify IDALS, the Iowa Department of Land Stewardship. What's it stand for? Iowa Department of
Agriculture and Land Stewardship.
They told me they have rules regarding the quality of fertilizer and the shipment of it. They have no rules regarding application. None. So we're here about, is our first concern here water quality? Then we need rules for all types of fertilizer. When I lobbied in D.C. for the Land Stewardship Project, there was a big push for EQIP money, environment qualities money, and it was a goal to get EQIP funding for manure storage up to $250,000. We lobbied against that. We thought it was the farmer's responsibility to farm and add crop nutrients in a manner that didn't pollute the environment. It was a duty of the farmer, and it shouldn't have to be subsidized by the taxpayer. And there were small farmers that could have used it. There were viable small dairies that could have used the money, but in D.C., if you help one, it ends up you got to help them all. So we said no taxpayer dollars. And I hope the Wallace Feedlot doesn't get taxpayer dollars. But if you're here only because of manure, if you know the truth, I happen to be an organic farmer. I cannot use synthetic fertilizer. It's not considered safe enough. But I can use manure, but it's regulated. I can only apply manure as much as if all the crops on my farm, which I cannot grow continuous row crop production, which is really the base of the problem that we're talking about today. Since the 1930s, we've been supporting row crop production far more than anything else in farming, and that's led to the problem today with water quality. And even that feedlot out we're talking about, if they had to grow all the feed for that, Wallace's aren't going to grow it all. They're going to buy a lot of their feed. They buy products, yes, some of it, and some will be corn. And if they had to do it themselves, there'd be way less feedlots around. So think a little broader, and if we're worried about water quality, we got to think broader than just, and even more so than just Bloody Run across the whole country, even beyond the United States. We exported so much to Mexico with the North American Free Trade Agreement. We drove millions of Mexican farmers off the land because we dumped so much corn on their economy at below the cost of production. And then the corporate hog producers came in, and Mexico had very limited environmental regulations. And then they went down to wreak havoc to the environment. And they had, Mexico relied on corn for actual food, and they had very unique varieties of corn for their tortillas and other foods that they made. They were lost because the farmers were forced off the land, and for generations these sites have been preserved by individual farmers. And I'm getting way off the subject, but thank you for your time.
Here's Phil Specht, local farmer in Clayton County, at the Save Bloody Run benefit.
Phil, with a important bird area on your farm.
Yes.
And you are in the watershed of Bloody Run.
That's correct, I am.
What's your concern?
I've set up a conservation easement for a bird sanctuary and grassland birds, and the cattle are part of the vegetative plan to provide quality habitat for grassland birds. So my perspective as a farmer, this is, it's not the cattle. The cattle isn't the problem. The problem is 39 million gallons of manure in one place with the same 3 foot of clay that they would have for a million gallons. In the karst topography, right above, they blasted a big hole in the ground. It's right in the rock. So if there's any problem with that, there'll be an extreme environmental catastrophe if that would leak out the bottom, which it could. But we've got this bigger issue of political will to actually demand accountability for these externalities of the environment, so that there's a particular problem with this Save Bloody Run because of this slip through the loopholes and unregulated this, and nobody's got the rules for that. So that it happened without any real oversight of any kind. It just is there. It's kind of one of those things. It's constructed now. There's been, I don't know, tens of millions of dollars, how much is in that, but there's a lot of money sitting there, all spent, and the only return is going to come if it's full of cattle. So you're talking more than 10,000 head. If you would put those same 10,000 head, like Jeff was saying to you, but Jeff Kling, that the calves have to come from somewhere. And cattle, the way that I farm with cattle, they're a carbon sink, carbon sequestration, grass, permanent grassland is plus for water quality. The habitat for the birds and all other kinds of living creatures that are out there on my farm, it's a farm that produces calves. So if you would have production of cattle spread across the strait, just for instance, instead of ethanol, the corn acres that go into the ethanol plant would be producing the calf. There wouldn't be flooding. There's a lot of benefits to having long rotations, capturing as many photons as possible that are not on bare ground. The main point I want to make is I was just totally lost control of our natural resources through our political process. So there's no oversight. The water quality, all these impaired streams, and Bloody Run is just one of the true gems of the Driftless. This stream right here
was designated as a protected water.
Yeah. So to not protect this, Des Moines is facing the problem of being able to drink the water. It's a large city without a reliable water supply because of agriculture. Agriculture is to blame for the water quality of Iowa. There's issues about cost sharing and that kind of thing of who pays for what. I know that when the cities met their Clean Water Act obligations, they had tax-free bonds and certain advantages so that there was public involvement to clean up the sewage plants of all the cities. So maybe there's a role for the public, but the primary responsibility is to farm right. So it's an issue of, it's not possible to do 11,000 head in karst topography responsibly. It's an impossibility. So we're to the point where all of these things that Larry talked about were just, nobody really wants to take responsibility for the community property, which is the environment, the clean water. That doesn't belong to Walz's and Supreme Beef, and they've put it all at risk.
Anything else?
I would say that there was rain just north of here about 6 miles. There was a gauge that recorded 14 inches. And were 14 inches of rain to happen when that thing is full, and that lagoon would fail, the city of Marquette would be covered with steer bleep, and the casino parking lot would be a very unhealthy place to visit, and that's just right down here. So we're talking about tourism, the trout fishing, and of course my love, the natural, the birds, everything at risk by what they've done with no oversight, really none. I mean, yeah, there were people out there making sure that there was 3 foot of clay, but
thank you, Phil.
We do to ourselves what we do to the water, to ourselves what we do to the water.
You have been listening to a recent gathering of concerned conservationists that gathered last weekend to save Bloody Run Trout Stream. We'll have a little bit more on the legal status a little bit later in the program. This is KHOY Community Radio's Local Talk, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum. Today with our great engineer Mike Murphy, my neighbor Mike Metz, let's welcome Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer with the City of Ames. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Pat. Good to see you.
Good to have you with us. Before we introduce your guests, do you have any announcements for the city?
I do have just one reminder. This coming Saturday is the last farmers market of the month, so that's the last farmers market of August, which means that it's our solar summer event. Kaylee Barros Lane, our energy services coordinator with the Ames Electric Services, has partnered with local electric vehicle dealers to bring electric vehicles down to the farmers market. Our partner dealer this time is Tesla. So if you've ever been interested in looking at a Tesla, taking a little spin in a Tesla, looking at the interior, the exterior, come down to farmers market. There's actually a link on our City of Ames website that you can sign up for a particular time slot where it's reserved for just you. So I think it's kind of an exciting thing. We're still getting familiar with electric cars, and this is a great opportunity to get closer to one.
Really cool. Yeah, that's great for a farmer's market. That's great. I see you've brought Justin Claussen with you today.
I did. I thought it might be a good time about mid-season to check in with the keeper of our city infrastructure.
Well, that's a lot to put on me there, Susan. I don't know about that.
Welcome, Justin.
Well, there's so much that you do, and I don't know that people realize how much you do, but also there's a lot of easy ways now to report when people see concerns, and so we can talk a little bit about the Ames on the Go app.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Good morning. How are you?
We're good here. Thanks Great. For joining us.
Yeah, so there's, as Susan said, there's a lot going on. If you haven't been around town, man, there's a lot of construction happening, and it's a busy time for us, especially right now as Iowa State kind of comes back into session, and then really we start looking towards the fall and all the construction projects that are going on and need to get finished before, you know, Mother Nature decides winter wants to be here, and we never know quite when that is. So there's a lot of work going on around town and a lot of things for people to watch out for. Some of the biggest areas that I think people are either curious about or we hear about is, you know, what's going on 13th Street. If you've been along 13th Street between Wilson and Duff, they're up by the hospital. That project is continuing to chug along. They finished paving on what I call the west side of it, and they're doing utility work now on the east side over by the hospital. So with that project there, obviously it's a large arterial street, but there are lots of things going on underground that take a lot of time. There's new storm sewer, new sanitary sewer, new water mains. You know, when we have an opportunity to get into a corridor like this, we really need to get in there once and get back out. So it takes a little more time, but it's what we need to do in order to make sure the infrastructure is good for another 40, 50, 60 years, hopefully. We don't have to do this again, you know, where it just kind of snarls up traffic for a little bit. Well, that one's happening really, really good. But yeah, go ahead.
It's manageable. It's a really big, big project. You can tell that as it evolves and moves along. But manageable. I think you're doing a great service to the city. Rather than just stopping everything, you've kind of made it work.
Yeah, we're able to keep, you know, and one of the biggest things that drives it there is that the hospital on one end really drives a lot of traffic, so we need to maintain access there. And then we also have the Fire Station 1 right in the middle of the project.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to make sure we can provide emergency services. So, you know, we really spent, our engineering team spent a lot of time working with both of those entities to make sure anything that we did there, people will still have access, maybe not as easy as they like it, but you can still get there, you can get there safely, and we can continue on with the project. So another one that people ask about a lot that's coming up, Grand Avenue. When are we going to get on that new piece of Grand Avenue south of South 4th there through the golf course area? And that's really, thankfully, you know, this has been years in the making. That it's been longer than I've been at the city, and I've been here for 10 years. With that, we're really close. I don't want to give an exact date because there's, of course, a lot of things that could happen because I'm not even sure I have an exact date. But sometime in the next probably 6 weeks, I would say maybe mid-October, you could expect that thing to be starting to be open, which is going to probably have a dramatic change on traffic patterns in the town. You know, we'll have a brand new street that goes through there. It's another crossing across Iowa Creek. Just a big improvement that we've been planning for a long time, finally coming to fruition. We're really excited about that.
Yeah, the transition from when it was a rail line to then kind of a bike trail to now super access to the southeast quadrant of Ames. I noticed from Elwood Drive, you can look across and see the golf course and then right into the Iowa Creek area and that new bridge, new project. Wow, it just really changes a lot of the vista of that area.
It does.
So, Pat, that's an interesting reference. I haven't heard it called Elwood Drive in a long time. It's now University.
Oh, it's now University. I see. I date myself constantly. Pardon me. Yeah. But
anyway. I remember that, too. I remember it being Elwood Drive as well for a long time. So that's okay. We can still have these old references for people that remember it that way.
Yeah. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things I wanted to bring up too, as Susan mentioned early on, is, you know, we're still in, our maintenance crews are still in the mode of I call it our routine patching and going around town, and we'll do that up until the weather doesn't allow us to anymore. So we want to make sure that people have ways to reach out to us if they see concerns. And it doesn't have to just be street patching, potholes, that sort of stuff. That's a low-hanging fruit we like to throw out there because it's really, you know, it affects a lot of people. But our Ames on the Go app, if you're so inclined on a smartphone, it's a really easy way to report things. If you can snap a photo, it really helps us, but it will geolocate your location whenever you report it, so it'll tell you where you're at and tell us where the concern is. But you can also, you don't have to do that from your phone either. If you prefer from a computer, you can do it from there. It's a little more involved because you have to pick on a map where the concern is. But the nice thing about this is it automatically feeds stuff. So if you report a pothole, it's going to automatically go to the right people, not necessarily the first person that picks up the phone if you were to call it in. It goes right to my street maintenance staff, and they get it right away. And they'll go ahead and acknowledge it, so you'll get a positive response back that says, hey, we know that there's a concern, and we acknowledge it. And then you'll get a notice back when it's completed, when we go out and fill it or take care of it. So you'll get some of that information that way. And we track some metrics on that really closely. And one of the things that we're really proud of is we are one of the fastest, I'll call it, fixing entities in the nation for this particular product. We respond faster than most every other city, and we take a lot of pride in that. And that's something that we really, really strive to do. You know, there are always things to do within the city. And if citizens have concerns, we try to make sure we respond to them in a quick manner and try to get resolution to it.
And you're so transparent. You keep us up to date here on KHOI Community Radio. So that's
absolutely. You help us carry the water on those issues. So we appreciate that.
Well, we appreciate all that you're coordinating. It goes without saying, because you're keeping the city moving in a good way.
That's our goal. You bet. You know, I like to say, if you don't see us, it's not a bad thing. It means that things are going well. Sometimes if you see us, that means we're having to do work, but that's okay. Yeah. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. Real good philosophy there, Justin.
Yeah.
Anything else, Susan or Justin?
That's all I've got for a report this morning, unless Susan has anything else to give to you.
No, I'm just looking ahead into September. We are at the end of August. Of course, we'll be closed for Labor Day. Mm-hmm. And September is shaping up to be quite a busy month. I just don't have a lot of concrete dates, but I know we've had Keith Abraham on here talking about various improvements to parks. We have those coming up. And we also have some environmental programming. We've rescheduled our lecture with Chad Pograki. He was supposed to come last year with our 10th anniversary of the Eco Fair.
Yeah, this is big.
We've rescheduled Chad to September 30th. We're also planning some companion events. So I'm hoping in the next week or so to be able to release a lot of that information, because it was quite a disappointment in 2020 where so many of those things had to be delayed.
Yeah, Chad Pograki started cleaning up the Mississippi River. Gosh, it's been 15, 20 years ago, and has really becoming a branding of how to go out and clean up a watershed. And even the Project Aware has had him as a guest. So Chad Pograki, I think, from the Quad Cities, on September 30th, that'll be a great, great program. The guy is unbelievable.
Yeah, there's also some local movement to do a local river cleanup in the area in that time frame. So again, I hope to be back very soon with a lot of those details, because a lot of really exciting plans are in the works.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Justin Claussen and Susan Guiasta. Have a good weekend.
Pat, we'll see you.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Thanks for having us.
Okay. Bye. Great to have you with us once again. Have a good weekend. Say, is Carolyn Kloss here?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Carolyn, president of the League of Women Voters, you've got some activities planned for this weekend.
Yes, and this is very last-minute planning, but it was interesting. A week ago, I was on a Zoom event, and I became aware of the 58th anniversary of the Martin Luther King I Have a Dream March in Washington to celebrate the vote and to march in support of the voting rights. Seems impossible that 58 years later we are still doing this for voting rights. But we will march tomorrow morning at 8:30, starting from Brookside Park. We will gather and we will march down 5th Street, then we'll go past wheat fields and across the bridge there, and we will go to City Hall, and we will have a voter registration event in front of City Hall tomorrow morning. We encourage anybody in Ames to join us for that tomorrow morning, starting at 8:30 at Brookside Park, march to Ames City Hall in celebration of Martin Luther King's 58th speech on I Have a Dream.
What a great opportunity to network with your neighbors, community. Be at Brookside Park, 8:30, Saturday morning, tomorrow morning. And
right, and then that'll put you downtown to go to the farmer's market for breakfast.
And you're right there. Yeah, at the farmer's market.
Yes, you're right there.
Super.
So please come out and join us. We're collaborating with the ISU student government is also helping with us on this. Come register to vote if you aren't, because we'll have the table set up.
And I understand you're going to be on local talk on Monday, but tomorrow morning, 8:30.
Yes, we're going to talk about those. Right. We're going to talk about this election and voting rights. And I look forward to talking to Ursula on that discussion for Monday.
That's great. Thank you so much. Let's return to the Bloody Run benefit concert and learn a bit more about the legal status of the Save the Bloody Run project. Here's attorney Wally Taylor, and then followed by attorney Carolyn Raffensperger.
Wally Taylor, where are we at with Save Bloody Run?
We are ready to file in court to challenge the DNR's decision to approve the nutrient management plan. And I'm representing the Sierra Club, and we have authority from the National Sierra Club to go ahead with that litigation. And we're waiting for Trout Unlimited, which is a trout fishing organization, obviously, to see if they would like to join in the litigation also. And they're waiting for approval or not.
Is that Steve Vesey, or is that a national Trout Unlimited?
The Trout Unlimited is a national organization, but they have local affiliates here in Iowa, but they have to get approval from their national organization.
Is that going to be enough?
Yes, I think so. I always like to have more, but that's all we can round up. And it will be an uphill battle, because it's always hard to challenge governmental action. You know, the old saying, you can't fight City Hall, but you can. And we think that here we have a very good case to show that the DNR violated their own rules in approving the nutrient management plan. And we also have evidence that there was political pressure from State Senator Dan Zumbach, who is the father-in-law of one of the owners of Supreme Beef.
So you make a very good point. It's going to be an uphill battle. But you've had other uphill environmental battles.
They're all uphill.
They're all uphill. They're, yeah.
And
why do you say that?
Because the laws and regulations are designed to help the entities that want to destroy the environment. And don't ask me why. Well, I do know why, because money talks. And, you know, many good causes are easier to fight. I won't say easy, but easier than environmental causes, because like civil rights or equal protection, things like that, you're not fighting the economic system. With environmental battles, you're fighting the economic system.
And what are the violations specifically that you're going to present in your arguments to the court?
They have miscalculated the amount of manure that will be coming from the facility. And by miscalculating that, they're underestimating how much manure will be applied to the crop fields where they're going to apply the manure. And the crop fields are all on highly erodible land. And they have not done the proper calculations also in determining how much manure they can put on that highly erodible land before it erodes off either into the groundwater or surface runoff. And you know, in the driftless area up here, the groundwater is a really fragile thing because of the karst topography that we have up here. You know, the fractured limestone and dolomite, the sinkholes, all of that is going to let this manure go into the groundwater and eventually into Bloody Run Creek and other creeks in the watershed.
Is there any studies where when pollutants are essentially injected into the subsoil, into the groundwater, how long it takes for it to flush through?
There might be. I haven't seen them, but there might be.
Yeah, so on the extreme, environmentally, where does this register in Wally Taylor's concern for the environment?
great, you know, 1 to 10?
Well,
is it 11?
In Iowa's, CAFOs are a 10, CAFOs generally. And in fact, the Sierra Club has asked for a moratorium on new CAFOs. We have way too many, and it's just, if you look at a map of Iowa, showing where all the CAFOs are, it's just a broad spectrum all over the state. You can't even tell where one is in relation to another. There's just so many of them.
So moratorium, it seemed to be.
Yeah. And now Chris Jones and others have documented how these CAFOs are destroying our water quality. You know, the EPA in 2011 issued a memo to the states along the upper Mississippi saying, you need to do something to stop all these nutrients from going into the Mississippi and down to the Gulf and creating this dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. And Iowa came up with a nutrient management plan, which is a joke. It's totally voluntary, no criteria, no way to test to see if it's being effective or not, but it's just to placate the farmers.
Anything else, Wally Taylor?
We need support from the people of Iowa to say no more CAFOs. DNR, do your job.
Well, Carolyn Raffensperger, recently I learned of a lawsuit centering around the Bloody Run trout stream and impacts of a cattle feeding operation in that watershed. And I learned of a term, protected waters. How do you view this situation?
I'm going to start with the river itself. And what's so interesting about Iowa is that we are defined by rivers. Our borders are rivers for the most part. And so the Missouri River, the Mississippi River, all are our boundaries, and they're even named in the Constitution, our Iowa State Constitution. We are defined by rivers.
Yeah, and a little bit of the Des Moines River and also the Big Sioux River, technically. But yes.
Yes.
Our east and west, all bound by rivers.
And what's so important is that they are actually named in our Constitution. Who we are, the basis for Iowa law, starts with our rivers. And yet we treat them like sewers. And the issue around Bloody Run is how precious that water is, how clean that water is. The trout that runs through that extraordinary river. And they want to put in a massive cattle feeding operation there, which threatens that in ways that are unspeakable. It's a travesty.
The karst topography is limestone, and it is structured in such a way that there are sinkholes. Essentially, a lot of times the surface water is directed right into the subsoil. So you're feeling that this location is going to put that trout stream in jeopardy?
I don't think that this is a question. I think we know for certain that this will threaten the groundwater and the river. The karst geology, this really amazing structures under the Earth's surface, are like Swiss cheese or like a sponge full of holes, and the water can run anywhere. And that we would put this huge feeding operation, all of that manure near our water, makes no sense. It just makes no sense. And when I think about the responsibility the state has for its residents, one of the first is to protect the water on which our lives depend. And this is an absolute abrogation, a refusal to take the responsibility for that precious river for this generation and for future generations. It is the wrong thing to do.
I understand the Sierra Club and the attorney Wally Taylor is going to sue our Department of Natural Resources. Has the care keepers of our water, why do we have to resort to litigation on these environmental issues?
I think it comes down to a different view of what government's responsibility is. If government's responsibility is only to grow the economy, then you look the other way when public health issues are at stake or when drinking water or air quality is at stake, we think the market can take care of it. And I hold a very different view of government. Government is what we do together. Government is how we protect the things we share. And we not only share that incredible waterway and others, the Des Moines River, other rivers that are flowing and carrying the lifeblood through our state. That is part of the trust, the public trust that government is responsible for. And what we are saying with a lawsuit is you are failing in your duty. You have this charge to take care of the things that we share, and you are failing in it. And we will hold you accountable to the best of our ability. And yet the courts, you know, 50 years of something called the Powell Memo, Lewis Powell was a Supreme Court justice in the United States Supreme Court, but before he was appointed by Nixon to that court, he wrote a memo to the Chamber of Commerce that said, there's no question, but the foundation of America, which is free enterprise, is under attack. And he wrote a blueprint for taking back, you know, the decision-making from people like Ralph Nader and others who were bringing litigation and trying to bring regulation to the market, and so that we were not being poisoned by things like pesticides, that tobacco companies had to comply with some basic duties to the public. And Powell's memo laid out an agenda that included the courts, that if they could get the courts to recognize really the centrality of industry and business, then they would not try and undermine business. They would recognize that business is the foundation of America. And we hold something entirely different. We've run that experiment, and the experiment has shown that what we'll end up with is a state like Iowa where the water is filthy. It is not drinkable. Des Moines Waterworks has one of the largest nitrate removal processes in the world because our water is so dirty. That is a failure of government. It's a failure of the philosophy that government is by and for money and the economy rather than by and for well-being. We stand with the river. We stand for future generations. We owe future generations clean water and a clean river.
Is there anything else? Carolyn Raffensperger.
I think that's it.
The director of the Science and Environmental Health Network that contributes to KHOI's Environmental Forum on occasion. And thank you so much for all you do for conservation, Carolyn.
Oh, thank you.
And that was Carolyn Raffensperger and earlier Wally Taylor, attorney for the Sierra Club, concerning Bloody Run. Local talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Friday at 89.1 FM. And tell your friends far and wide. KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find the yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
Thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Rudenberg and Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy, and thanks to our guest Larry Stone,
Clayton County farmers Jeff Kling and Phil Speck,
Susan Guiazda, Justin Claussen, Wally Taylor, and Carolyn Raffensperger, and thank you, Mike Metz. I've been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum.
See you again on the radio.